Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I don't think it's any surprise to learn that the government lies to us all on a regular basis, and probably about something new every day. I've been thinking more and more lately about the fact that I'm now part of one of those lies, a lie that stares down at Earth every night from 384,000 kilometers away. They say we never returned to the moon, that we never went back after leaving the surface nearly 50 years ago. Hell, some people don't think we ever got up here at all. But really, we've been living up here for quite a while, watching you from above. As far as everyone knows, Apollo 17 was the last mission to the moon. It broke all sorts of official records. The longest spacewalk, the longest lunar landing, and the largest samples ever returned to Earth. The most lunar orbits, 75, and the most time orbiting the moon, over 6 days. The crew returned after all that effort to find that nobody really seemed to care all that much anymore about space travel. They had other things on their mind. The moon landings, NASA, and the heroism of astronauts were suddenly old news. It was like after all the time spent trying to get there, people had suddenly become bored of hearing about the place. Of course, there was another problem as well. There had been too many accidents, too many disasters. It was getting to be too risky to visit our orbiting neighbor or to send astronauts into space at all. Capitalizing on this indifference, the Shadow Government began planning for a different sort of lunar operation, one that would set up a base in secret on the surface of the moon, in a subterranean lair that could not be spotted by telescopes from Earth. It would operate in secrecy and would serve as a spy operation and a bunker in the event of total annihilation on Earth. It was the era of the Cold War, after all. The top secret moon base was stocked with supplies, and 2 men and 2 women were chosen as the team for each annual rotation, to serve as a contingency plan should all else fail on Earth. Generations of us have served now, up here on the moon. When the Cold War ended, everybody thought it would be over, that the base would be abandoned. But the powers that be kept it going, citing the position of the doomsday clock still so precariously close to midnight. Up here, we rotate every year so that nobody dies of radiation poisoning, cancer, or bone deficiencies. Still, we're all taking a decade or more off of our lifespans just by living up here. We do it though. It's just part of the job. Who else can claim to have been to outer space? To have touched the surface of the moon? To have lived here? I couldn't turn down the opportunity. I tell you one thing. You can't beat that view from the surface. Earth really does just look like a shiny blue rock from up here. So small and insignificant, you can't help but feel awed, humbled. We don't go out on the surface very often, only on rare special occasions, to take samples or to do experiments. That's why it startled me so badly when I woke up and found the bunker empty. "Ryan? Jess? Sarah?" I called out after removing my earplugs. I could never sleep without them. "Anybody?" No one answered. It's not like the place was very big. There was nowhere for them to really hide. But all 3 of them were gone. Their spacesuits too. It was obvious they had left, but it just didn't make sense. There was no spacewalk scheduled for today, I thought to myself. The risks of going out on the surface could not be understated. We went out there sparingly, often staying inside for weeks at a time. And we never went out all together, only in teams of 2. That way, if something happened, the mission could still continue. We were walking, talking, living contingency plans for each other, and for all of mankind. We weren't permitted to take risks. I called home base, but there was no response. It was like the connection had been severed. All I was getting was fuzzy, blaring static. There wasn't much else I could do but sit and wait for them to come back. There was plenty of food and water at least, so I wouldn't starve. But I couldn't say the same for them. It didn't look like they'd taken anything with them. No food, water, nothing. Days passed by, and my mind wandered aimlessly, thinking of all the possibilities. Cut off from Earth, I had no idea if the worst had happened down there as well. A global catastrophe of some kind that resulted in a communication disruption crossed my mind. EMPs, nuclear bombs, plagues, floods, global warming, bloody zombies, even the Rapture. All of these things ran through my mind as I paced the small living quarters. I just remained there, waiting and waiting, unsure what would happen. The resupply mission that would also relieve us from our duties was several months away, and who knew if they would even show up now? I had no way of knowing what was going on or what news I had missed. As the days turned to weeks, I came to grips with the fact that I was truly and completely alone in every way. No crew and no communications. On a life raft by myself, far out in the never-ending ocean of space. I was too scared to go outside, so I just waited and waited, terrified. Alone on a rock hundreds of thousands of miles from home. It was deathly silent in the HAB unit, except for the sound of my own breathing as I paced and ate rations, slept, drank, and waited endlessly. Then, suddenly, as I was fast asleep, the communications array started back up again. Lights began to glow red and green, yellow and blue, and alarms began to sound as the systems woke up from their long slumber, and I arose with them, blinking my eyes in disbelief. And then, something even more impossible happened. The airlock door alarm sounded. Someone was entering the HAB unit, and not just one person. There were three of them. All my crewmates were miraculously back. Weeks after they had left, the crew that I had written off as dead came into the airlock from outside. They marched inside with stiff movements, as if they were very cold, and waited for the room to depressurize. The faces were blank and expressionless as they came into the habitation area a few minutes later. Now, out of their suits, they remained silent and said nothing to me as I stared at them. My blood turned cold in my veins as I saw their eyes were completely black now. I spoke to Sarah, my partner, first. Overcome with emotion, I didn't even really think about the utter impossibility of it all, or the strange changes that had affected them. They shouldn't have been alive. I had already determined it was impossible. They brought no provisions with them after all. 3 days without water up here, and you're done for. 7 days without food. But they'd been gone for weeks with neither one. The thing is, when you've been alone like that for so long, you lose track of everything. All you feel is loneliness, and you desperately crave any sort of human contact, as essentially as air, water or food. Nothing else mattered when I saw them, especially Sarah. I embraced her fiercely, holding her so tightly, I worried for a moment I'd perhaps hurt her with my bear hug. She did not hug me back, but instead felt cold and limp in my arms. She just stared at me, her eyes blank, looking through me at some place far distant. Sarah? I shook her and held her face in my hands. My heartbeat was pounding in my jugular, faster and faster. The first thing I noticed was that she was cold, frigid like ice when I touched the skin. What's wrong with her? I asked, my face looking back and forth between Brian and Jess, hoping desperately for an answer. Their faces stared back at me, just as blankly, seeming not to see me, but to look right through me. Where have you been? I've been here by myself for weeks. I couldn't get a hold of anyone back home, and I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was weeping as I spoke, overcome with emotions. Brian's pale face snapped around to look at me. Like an eel, he looked slippery and pale, a thin sheen of sweat clinging to his skin in fine droplets. We are sorry for that, he said robotically. We have found something outside, You must come to examine it with us. You must hear the sound it made for us. So, that was it, I thought. Now I had at least something to go on. There had been some noise that had driven them out there like the sirens in Homer's Odyssey. No wonder I'd been unaffected by it. I always slept with earplugs, while the rest of them had been exposed to it. There's no sound on the moon though, so it would have to come over the radio. I imagine the scene vividly in my mind. The whole crew fast asleep when a sound suddenly crackled over the speakers in the comm system. A frequency from some other species had perhaps been calling to them, and to me. Only, I'd missed the transmission due to my sound dampening headphones. What if I don't want to hear the sound, Brian? I asked as he roughly took hold of my arm and they marched me towards the airlock. The song of darkness is for everyone. You will find it soothing, he said, his voice cold and distant. I didn't like the sound of that one bit. I began to struggle and fight against them, but it was no use. Brian's grip on my arm was like a steel vise, and there was no breaking free from it. They forced me into a spacesuit and marched me out the doors and up to the surface, cramming me into the back of our moon rover. We were soon off driving, and I was left in the silent, lonely void of my own spacesuit. A voice crackled to life in my ear and began to speak. I realized it was Brian talking once more, as if he was their spokesperson. You must see what we have seen. All will see, but we are fortunate enough to be allowed a glimpse of what is to come before all the others. And what is that, Brian? What am I going to see, and what is it going to do to me? He hesitated momentarily, but then spoke again. Not to me this time. Cheek nu hag zifat, he said flatly, or something like that. Dirkvig regusbeck. Whatever language they were now speaking, I had never heard anything like it before. They said a few more things back and forth, and then were silent for a very long time as we drove and drove for what felt like hours. If not for my terror, I might have drifted off. But I didn't care, knowing essentially well that our air supplies would only last for so long out there. I tried to breathe sparingly and savored every breath. Finally, the moon rover turned down a steep embankment and we were rolling down a hill toward the entrance of what looked like some kind of natural cave. It was a black hole in the moon rock which gaped open like a mouth as we drove towards it. It seemed to open wider as we approached, and then everything became dark as we entered the cavern on the surface of the moon. We stopped inside the blackness of the tunnel, and I saw eyes were staring at us from the darkness. They reflected like purple mirrors in the dim space. The others had gotten out of the vehicle now, and I could see them in the dim light of the cave, bowing before the things with the purple eyes. A voice spoke suddenly in my ear, and I could hear it clearly through the radio. It sounded like broken glass scraping across a chalkboard. You were not among your companions when they came the first time. Why? I thought about this, and then simply replied with the truth. I woke up and they were gone. I didn't know I was invited to whatever this is. Whispers could be heard in my mind as my former comrades spoke to each other in that strange language once again. After a few minutes of debate, the voice in my ear, like broken glass, spoke again. I tried not to scream at the sound of it. We cannot give you the same gift we bestowed upon them. There are forces at work which even we cannot control, and we use them as we are able, but only as they allow. We will, however, grant you another privilege. What is it? I asked, suddenly becoming even more afraid, which I hadn't thought possible. We will show you what we are capable of, so that you may never tell your kind what we will do. If you resist, you will be a messenger for us. My three former crew members stood up suddenly and began to march towards me in the dark space, grabbing me roughly and pushing me over to stand in front of the largest of the pair of purple eyes. "Watch and listen." The creature suddenly began to emit a sound like a purring of a large cat, but then it rose suddenly in pitch until it pierced my ears, and I felt blood begin to dribble from them. My three former friends were suddenly lifted up into the air as the room filled with a dull purple glow, and I saw the things which had affected my crewmates. I finally saw the creatures which were hiding in the cavern on the dark side of the moon. In the dull purple glow of their power, I saw that they were huge jungle cats, black like jaguars, but they had many more legs, reminding me of a giant spider mixed with wildcats. The purple eyes reflected back at me as they watched impassively and effortlessly as my friends hovered and levitated in the air in the middle of the cavern room. Suddenly, the space helmets were lifted off their heads, and I screamed, knowing what would happen to them in the vacuum of space. But nothing did. They breathed the non-existent air and looked quite content, still for a few more moments, as if the creatures had created a little ecosystem with a livable atmosphere in this cavern somehow. Then, Brian's eyes began to weep dark, almost black-looking liquid. It ran down his cheeks, and his flesh began to peel and melt from the top of his skull. Skin sloughed off and dropped from him to the floor, his connective tissues seemingly disappearing as his bones and body fell apart from themselves, scattering everywhere as he fell lifelessly to the ground. Jess went next, her skull suddenly there, and then, an instant later, gone, like a piece of fruit that had been left out to rot, viewed in fast forward. She came apart at the seams. The warm vital fluids splashed my suit and covered my visor and gore, which I wiped away as I screamed, knowing one more person still remained. Sarah. My partner, my lover, my... As I looked into her dead black eyes, she stared back at me, and I thought for an instant I saw a glimmer of some sort of recognition in her eyes, as if, maybe for a moment, she had remembered our life together. She opened her mouth as if to say something, and then her tongue fell out from her mouth, looking black and dark and dead. Her teeth fell out from her mouth as she aged 1,000 years in an instant, and likewise collapsed dead to the floor of the cavern. The purple glow went dim, leaving the room almost in blackness once again. I was left alone, staring at the cave full of darkness again, with the purple eyes of terrifying creatures surrounding me on all sides, watching me from the shadows. "This is what you will tell your people back on Earth," the voice said in my ear. "These are the ones we gave favor to, and look at what we have done to them, to set an example to you. Just imagine what we will do to the rest of you, if you disobey." I backed away, stumbling over rocks as I raced toward the moon rover. More of them were coming out from the shadows, smaller creatures with the same reflective purple eyes. Hundreds of them, thousands, coming out to feast on the fresh meal. "Tell your people that we are coming. Tell them they have two choices, to listen to our song and submit to us, or to become our minions. Or they can become like these ones are, food to our young. Tell them to choose wisely." I jumped in the moon rover and took off, racing back to the HAV unit, locking myself inside. I prayed for rescue, hoping it wasn't too late to get back, to warn everyone. It's been a few months since all this happened. I'm back on Earth now, and have yet to tell anyone about what I've seen. Until now. As far as my supervisors know, my three crewmates never came back after disappearing. I figured it was easier to leave it that way for the time being. They aren't very open-minded, my supervisors, and I didn't think my bosses at Space Force would understand, or if they would think I spent too many hours in low gravity. After hearing a story like that, for all I know, they might have pinned their deaths on me. So, I kept it a secret. I know I'm a coward, but I didn't want to face the consequences, and the best case scenario would have been a cover-up. That would mean shipping me off somewhere. When they want to get rid of somebody, often they'll send them up to some far remote northern radio base to listen to foreign signals, they say, but mostly just to send them somewhere unpleasant. I don't want that to happen to me. I try to avoid the radio these days. I'm a little afraid of what I might hear playing on it one day soon, so I keep the volume down. And I always sleep with my earplugs in.